Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes and those infographics of cows that show you where all the different types of meat come from. Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hot dog, hot dog, hot diggity dog. It's a brand new day. What you waiting for? Get up, stretch out, stomp on the floor.
Hell yeah.
Hot dog, hot dog, hot diggity dog. Hot dog, hot dog, hot diggity dog. We're splitting the scene.
Hi, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is November 23rd. It is Thanksgiving week. Are you excited for Thanksgiving? I sure am. It's one of my favorite holidays. It is like Christmas without all the bullshit. Am I right? I know some of you might be saying, well, Thanksgiving, Brett, a lot of bullshit attached to that, too. There sure is. Don't think I forgot. I know the story. I'll be posting our obligatory Thanksgiving revisionist history show from 2012 in the group later this week for Flashback Friday. That's a little memory lane thing I've been doing with it. Yeah, an Asian theme. So get in our group and participate there. A lot of enriching conversation goes on in the School Sucks group, and it's a good place to get news and updates about the show. So anyway, yeah, Thanksgiving, I'm excited. We are going to be having raviolis this year. You know, people do these turkeys, they're insane. We're going to be doing raviolis with sausages and meatballs, I think. And you're going to learn today about why it's going to be okay for me to eat that on Thursday. We're going to get into that in today's show. But these turkeys, good heavens. I mean, what are people thinking? You got to take stuff out. You got to put stuff in. You got to put it in the oven all day. What's your electric bill going to look like at the end of the month? We got to start thinking more carefully about some of these traditions. But it's nice, you know, family and friends get together. People seem grateful, which is always nice. Gratitude is really important. And I hope your Thanksgiving is beautiful. And in addition to Turkey Day, they call it Turkey Day, like you don't even have a choice. But in addition to Thursday, we've got a busy week here at School Sucks. I've got two college professors on the show. I'm not even going to tell you who they are. And coming up this weekend, the next installment of Podcast Masters Liberty Masterclass will be recorded. Osborne, Gardner, and I, provoked by the release of the new James Bond movie, Spectre, we'll be exploring the history of James Bond, Ian Fleming, and British intelligence.
Hot dog, hot dog, hot diggity dog.
Sorry. All right, so today on the show, Kevin Geary and Nick Hazelton. This is a conversation we had last week for Nick's show, the Anarcho-Yakitalist podcast. And this discussion had its genesis in episode 378 of School Sucks. That show, a must-listen, if you ask me, is called An Introduction to Self-Directed Learning and Living for Teens. And as we discussed in that show, Nick left school this past September to pursue his self-education. Part of his self-designed curriculum focuses on independent living, which includes learning how to plan and execute a health-conscious yet affordable trip to the grocery store or a grocery store alternative. So that's our conversation today. Big thanks to Nick Hazelton for including me, and of course to Kevin Geary for all of his wisdom on this subject. And I try to act as a bit of a knowledge bridge between the two. Kevin helped me out a lot in the past. Go to School Sucks, search Kevin Geary. You can find all our health and fitness-related conversations. We've had a few of them. So I'm going to play you a clip from my discussion with Nick in episode 378, where the idea for today's show was hatched like a turkey that would grow into something beautiful and food-related. Here we go. This is something we could do a whole show about if you wanted to.
Oh, totally.
Meal planning, meal plans? Cooking, and shopping.
Yeah. I've been listening to Rebooted Body
good.
Recently. I unfortunately really like bread. I love cake. Yeah. Man, pastries are amazing. But yeah, anyway, that's something that I think I want to work on more.
Speaking of Rebooted Body, if Kevin heard me say that to you, he'd probably say, I should probably be involved in that too, because Brett on his own. Kevin helped me out a lot back in March when I was really confused about what I was doing. And I kind of used that experience as a springboard to really focus in, pay more attention, and come up with a better system for myself. I definitely recommend his show as a resource for that. But I really think my strength would be introducing somebody to, number one, how to eat healthy at a low cost. Right. If somebody was just a complete disaster, right, like you open their pantry and there's cans of SpaghettiOs, even though SpaghettiOs are so delicious. and they're really good if you add just a little sugar and some Parmesan cheese and stir it. But that wouldn't be one of my tips in the show that we were going to do, Nick. That wouldn't even be in there. I wouldn't even mention SpaghettiOs. But if somebody was in like SpaghettiOs land as far as their relationship with food, I could help them. So depending on where you are, yeah, I mean, I would love to have that conversation. I think we could both learn and share ideas. Because you're doing a lot of things that I don't know about. I mean, you're going to be like processing your own food.
Right.
You know, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I just started recently listening to Rebooted Body. Mm-hmm. I first heard about Kevin from your show, and I was thinking, oh man, some of this stuff, it kind of explains some of the issues I'm having health related. So I'm listening to more of a show, and then I was thinking I need to contact him. So I would definitely be interested in doing that show with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I know a girl who thinks it goes. She'll make you breakfast. She'll make you toast. But she don't use butter. She don't use cheese. She don't use jelly or any of these. She uses Vaseline.
So let's jump straight into this. One of the things you promote, Kevin, is eating real food, and this is stuff that's not processed, right? This is like, I don't know how to explain it. What's a good definition of real food?
Yeah, I explain it as eating stuff that was previously alive. So that's pretty much, I mean, if you pick something up and you just ask yourself, hey, was this previously alive? And the answer is yes, then there's a good chance it's good for you. And if the answer is no, then you should probably think a little bit deeper on it.
I like that. Okay. So when we're shopping for real foods, for me, coming into this is I want to know, where can I get cheap real food? Where's the best place I can go to get cheap food?
Yeah, so I guess that is one of the most popular questions. And we have, I guess we can boil this down into three different suggestions. So the first one is your local grocery store. And fortunately, the economy is changing to the point where I think grocery stores, especially the big chain stores, are catching on to the demand for more real food, for higher quality food, for better sourced food, and they're providing it. So when I walk into my local Kroger, for example, they have an entire section of the store that's been dedicated to organic products and organic meats, grass-fed meats, things like that. And I can remember, I don't know, maybe 7-8 years ago, that wasn't even a possibility. So people had to go kind of elsewhere for that stuff. But now with the economy changing, the grocery stores are providing that stuff. So I always tell people to go there first because you're going to probably get the majority of stuff there in the most convenient way possible. The second thing would be farmers co-ops. And these can be found in local parks, local cities, and even in kind of retail spaces. So for example, where I live, there's two different options for me. The city park down the street does a farmer's co-op every Tuesday. And then there's also a retail location, which is basically the co-op rented out this retail space at only one day a week. And then they let you order everything online. So basically I can go reserve. They tell you everything they're going to have. You can go on their website. You can reserve everything, even pay for it if you want. And then you just go on that one day a week they're open to pick it all up. And they all have it, you know, prepackaged for you, ready to go and take home. And I can get pretty much everything you can imagine through that. Because what they're doing with that concept is they're, and this is how most co-ops work, is instead of you trying to go out and find farmers, all these farmers pool together and come to one location and provide a bunch of stuff for everybody that shows up. And that co-op that's in my area just kind of took that to the next level, providing the online shopping experience and the pickup day. So you don't have to go and show up and see what they have and hopefully get there early enough before things run out. You can reserve your stuff ahead of time. And then if you can't do that, if you can't find co-ops, you can always go, like I said, the third option is direct to a local farmer. And this is easier than you might think. A lot of people that run big farms are really welcoming to the public. They want to build relationships in the community. They want people to buy stuff from them directly. So you just kind of search Google for local farms in your area. And there's some sites that I give as well that'll help people find these. But those are primarily your best three options. Besides, I guess, well, let me just throw a fourth in there. We'll just ad lib a fourth, obviously, hunting. Right? Mm-hmm. Go hunt your own food. Go catch your own food. That's another option as well. And if you do that, I mean, it's not always – you're asking about cheap stuff. I'm not a hunter, but I've heard that it's not very cheap. So you got to buy the licenses. Obviously, you have to buy equipment, and then you have to pay for all of the meat processing after the fact, maybe even shipping, storage. So that may not be the most cost-effective option, but it is definitely an option, and it's a very healthy option.
Yeah, definitely. I can speak as a farmer for that third one. Yeah, totally. If somebody comes up to me or sends me an email, I'm more than happy to talk to them, and I definitely want to sell them meat or whatever I have. And for the hunting thing, yeah, I know a lot of people actually, maybe not a lot, but I know at least a few people that do rely on hunting as a primary means for putting meat in the freezer. You know, I've got a friend who he's part Umpqua Indian, so he gets special stuff for hunting, you know, and then he's a youth, so he gets to get some extra animals, and that's what they do. His family is they got to have meat in the freezer, and that's their way to do it, and it works out. But it is becoming kind of hard to do that with a lot of the private landowners are requiring permits now.
Right.
But no, yeah, you're right. It's a way to do it. Definitely.
I mean, it's definitely something I want to get into. I want to get into hunting. I have some friends that hunt, and I think it's going to be one of my goals in 2016 is to contact them and ask them to get me started and take me out on some hunts, because I love the idea, and I'm sure I'm very busy. I know Brett's very busy. I'm sure Brett can probably agree with this. Mm-hmm. But if you just have a giant freezer somewhere, like in your garage, in your basement, wherever you can put it, and it's stocked full of meat, and you don't have to constantly go to the grocery store. All you really have to do is keep stocked up on vegetables, berries, fruits, that kind of thing. Then, I mean, how much more convenient can it get? Because you have months and months worth of food after a hunt.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and part of my role in this show today, Nick, can be to provide answers to what Kevin says with maybe some slightly less ambitious alternatives. So another option that gets you the same result is a lot of people around here in New Hampshire will go in on a cow or a pig together. So they'll buy the whole cow or the whole pig and then basically just divvy up all of the meat. So like I have friends, you open a freezer and it's just filled and they're packed down to, you know, it's not half a cow in there. They're packed down to 1 pound, basically, what's that, like 4 servings of ground beef in a package. If you have people who are willing to do that with you, and if you have providers in your area who are willing to, you know, offer that service.
Yeah, and I guess if you're on the less ambitious side and you have a friend that's a hunter, I'm sure you can just say, hey, you know, next time you go on a hunt, can I just buy some of what you bring back?
Absolutely.
You know, you don't even have to go with them.
Or ask to learn, see if you can do a little apprenticeship where you can learn how to actually process the animal yourself. You know, like, hey, I'll come help you out taking this thing that you shot and turning it into serving sizes. And then, you know, maybe you can give me a deal on buying it from you. So you could learn how to do it. You could pick up a skill that could be useful in the future when you are ambitious enough to actually partake in the hunt. And one other one, as far as the supermarkets are concerned, because I do have to prioritize controlling costs over a lot of the times, unfortunately, having the best ingredients, I try to purchase everything at one location. We have a pretty good supermarket in New England. It's called Demula's Market Basket. And they were known for a long time as being the kind of ghetto supermarket, but they recently rebuilt a lot of their stores and built new locations. And they put pretty much, because they also were known for having lower prices, they put pretty much everything else out of business. But they're slow to follow this trend that the bigger supermarkets, the ones that I think are nationwide, like maybe Hannaford or Stop and Shop, they have this section of the store, like here's where the healthy food is. What I noticed is when they put everything together like that, you're usually paying higher prices for the stuff in that section, even versus like Market Basket, where that stuff is just kind of dispersed all over the store. So you have to spend a little more time going around the supermarket and looking for the things you want, but you'll wind up paying less for them. You're paying a little bit more for the convenience of having them all basically in the healthy corner of the supermarket. So I have found that I can buy pretty much everything I need without making too many sacrifices at this supermarket. And what I really don't want to do is wind up in situations where I'd have to spend time in something like a Whole Foods or a lesser known Whole Foods equivalent, where I'm going to walk around the store and maybe I'm there to get two or three things, but then I see all these other things that I've never seen before and I want them. And I also made the mistake of going there hungry. So, but you know, I walk out of there and I wind up spending $100 in addition to my weekly grocery bill. I've also managed to pick up a $15 salad and $12 worth of hot food. That's the equivalent of basically one meal. So I want to stay out of places like Whole Foods. That's dangerous for me economically, yes. You know? So I would rather just spend the time up front to investigate my supermarket. Before this conversation, I actually just drew a little map of like, okay, when I go into the supermarket, where do I have to go? I mean, everyone always talks about, you know, shopping the perimeter, but I like to do little investigations going up and down the aisle sometimes and finding things that I normally wouldn't have come across if I'm just going to do that quick zip around the, you know, the outer perimeter of the supermarket, which is where, for people who are new to this, all of the dairy, eggs, meat, and vegetables would be, which would be most of the ingredients that I would buy.
Yes. And I will say, you know, going into this even further, there's a lot of people out there who may have a lot of fun and a lot of ambition when it comes to like making a lot of their own foods. So when Brett talks about shopping the perimeter and not going up the aisles, well, I go up the aisles. I mean, for example, I need ketchup. Right. So I might go up the aisle to get ketchup where all the other processed food is, where somebody else may be very ambitious and say, hey, you can make healthier ketchup at home. I don't really go to that extent. So just want to kind of give that disclaimer. I'm not a make it at home type person.
You know, this brings up a pain point for me, Kevin, and it's on the topic of salad dressing. Because I love salads.
I do make my own salad
dressing. Exactly.
It's the only thing I make myself.
Right. Because even these fancy salad dressings, like maybe people have heard of this brand Annie's, and you'll pay like $5 for three or four servings of it. And a serving of salad dressing is not two tablespoons. That just doesn't work. That's like the half cup serving of ice cream. That's for crazy people. So I started, I think it was after a conversation that I had with Kevin back in March, looking at some of the other ingredients or looking at things that I just never really looked at the ingredients in before, things like mustard and salad dressing. And the bleep soybean industry has cornered the entire salad dressing market. The first ingredient in any kind of mayonnaise or salad dressing is almost always soybean oil. And soybean oil is also in a lot of things that I thought were just completely fine to buy without really thinking about, like mustard or other condiments. This is what almost drove me to the Whole Foods, was like needing good salad dressing that doesn't
have soy. Well, that's the thing. Okay, so I was going to say that about Whole Foods is the secret about Whole Foods is that a normal grocery store has 80% processed crap. Mm-hmm. And a Whole Foods has 80% organic processed crap.
Oh.
So you actually, like, you're not going to find, if you go, the salad dressings at Whole Foods are still going to have vegetable oils in them, because you also have to remember that according to the USDA, vegetable oils are safe. Those are what we need to be eating more of. And we need to stay away from the saturated fats, the animal products. So, you know, and olive oil is a lot more expensive, especially if it's real olive oil. There's a lot of fake olive oil out there, but real olive oil is more expensive. And you said the soybean oil has cornered the market. the reason that is because soy is a heavily subsidized crop. Yep. So they're artificially reducing the price, and then manufacturers go, oh, look, that stuff's a lot cheaper. Let's just go with that. And that's where you end up with, you know, having to make your own salad dressing at home, basically.
Which is pretty much, I mean, I found a couple, there's a brand called Brianna's that's pretty much everywhere that didn't have any soy in it. But, you know, because of the conversation I had with Kevin, Nick, earlier this year, I also started looking in what is the amount of weird gums that I'm ingesting, and tried to cut those out of my diet as well. So, yeah, I did wind up making, you know, simple oil, olive oil and vinegar type salad dressings, and maybe sometimes adding almond butter, which is nice. Mm. And apple cider vinegar will cut up any kind of thick nut butter really well. So you just have to stir it or shake it or food process it like in a little magic bullet or something. And it makes a nice dressing. So that's an alternative.
Okay. Cool. I'm gonna look into that. Because my dad used to buy like the fancy nut oils. Mm-hmm. And he would make salad dressing. And they're really good. I really like that salad dressing. And we're kind of that way where we're trying to do more and more of it on our own, especially with the meat, because I've got 20 something pigs out there, and I gotta eat at least one of them every year. I think we eat two, and mm-hmm. then I have the yaks too. So I like that, getting into doing it yourself. I value that from a self-reliance standpoint.
Well, also with salad dressing, it's really important because you have to look at the quantity of something you're consuming. So if you're making ketchup at home so that you can have, you know, a tablespoon or two tablespoons of ketchup every week, it's probably not, I don't think it's worth going through the work. But if I'm eating salad every day and I'm using a lot of salad dressing, I don't want to be consuming that much soybean oil and that much garbage. So it makes sense to go through the effort to just make it myself. So you just put things in context according to what your individual needs are, then you're going to come out with the right answers.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not going to be making my own ketchup. I don't value it that much. I don't need it that much.
Yeah.
Okay, so then now we kind of know where we're going to go get it. You can go to the grocery store or the farm, you can go hunting, the farm co-ops. So what about the food? What are we looking for specifically in the aisles and at the farmer's co-op?
So I'll just run down my kind of beginner shopping guide list, and I just have it kind of categorized. It's not in any sort of shopping efficiency, obviously, because every grocery store is laid out differently. But we'll start with the category of animals, very nutrient-dense food source. And I'll just throw this caveat out there before we start, because Brett was talking about budget consciousness as well. The key with animals is if you can't afford the really high-quality meat, then you want to buy the leanest meat possible. Because the fat is going to have most of the toxins in it, most of the bad stuff. So you want to get the leaner cuts of meat if you can't buy the good quality stuff. You can buy the good quality stuff, then the fat is fine. If you can't, then go for the leaner cuts of meat. So beef, lamb, and venison are kind of at the top of my list, just staying stocked on those. I know that according to the health and fitness industry, the mainstream health and fitness industry, chicken is probably the most popular source of animal protein. Everybody says get those boneless, skinless chicken breasts. And it's clean protein, especially if the chickens are, you know, pasture raised, but there's not a lot of nutrition there. So if you can kind of branch out and get into the beef and the lamb, the venison, you're going to get a lot more in terms of micronutrient density and a bigger range of nutrition. So I talk a lot about nutritional diversity, just getting a diverse range of the micronutrients. So those are the kind of three that are at the top of my list. And then we have pork, and then we have poultry, and then we have eggs kind of next. And again, the highest quality stuff that you can afford. And then I also have fish and seafood in there. And with fish and seafood, if you're, again, same thing, concept. If you're buying a farm-raised fish, which I never do because I'm not a fish lover by any means, and if it's not wild-caught, then I'm just not going to eat it. I'll just choose something else. But if you do get wild-caught and you can verify that it's wild caught, then you want the fattier cuts because you're gonna, that's where a lot of the great omegas are gonna be found. So just make sure you're making your decisions based on kind of that framework there. So just as a run through again, beef, lamb, venison, pork, poultry, eggs, fish, and seafood. Those are gonna be my staple go-tos for animals.
Okay.
So I would prioritize, you know, here's another thing too that's going to probably come up throughout this conversation is I can get pretty lazy with this stuff and I am also fond of routines. So I'll figure out how to make something that's delicious, which is a priority when I'm eating, that I enjoy the eating. And then I'll wind up really sticking with it. And, you know, Kevin mentioned diversity, especially with things like vegetables, which is really important. So I've made more of a conscious effort to go into the supermarket and challenge myself with some kind of new vegetable at least once a week. But if we're starting with meat, and maybe Kevin can provide a little more information here, grass-fed beef is a pretty easy thing to find, I think, in just about any supermarket. And
yeah.
Especially around here, there's a brand called Australia Gold. And if you Google this, Australia Gold, not Australian Gold, Australian Gold is tanning lotion. And I think the thing is that in Australia, feeding cattle grass is common practice. Well,
I don't even know if it's legal to feed them grain. That's why a lot of the meat comes from like New Zealand and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, in the United States, it's God knows what, you know? I mean, mostly grain, I'm guessing, but
yeah, absolutely.
You know, occasionally, you know, some jelly beans get in there, whatever. I'm sure they're not stringent about it. So another thing, too, that I learned just from doing investigations around the meat section is that most lamb also comes from Australia and New Zealand. So if you're buying lamb, and it might say this right on the package, it'll tell you where it comes from. And it's a pretty good bet that if it's from Australia and New Zealand, it's also grass-fed. Lamb has, man, the equivalent serving size in lamb versus ground beef might be close to like twice as many calories, you know, where ground beef could have a serving is 4 ounces, 16, 17 grams of fat when, you know, lamb is like 26 or 27 grams. The protein is about the same. There's no carbs in either one, but it's more calories for about the same money, maybe a little bit more money. Maybe you're paying like an extra dollar a pound for lamb most places. But the grass-fed stuff is getting easier and easier to find. That's the point. I don't mind eating the salmon out of the packages as long as it says wild-caught sockeye salmon. I don't know how Kevin feels about this, but I even found it in a can, wild-caught salmon. And
yeah,
if it's going into a, I wouldn't open a can and eat meat out of a can, but I would put it on a salad. As long as it is wild-caught sockeye salmon, I don't care if it comes out of a can. And it's way more affordable than, you know, buying it at the fish counter and cooking it myself, that's fine with me. And the other one that I eat a lot of, because it's very easy and very affordable, and you get a lot of omega-3, is sardines. And that was a suggestion that I got from Kevin. And when he gave it to me, I said, oh, sardines. And yeah, you open a can of sardines and you regret it. You regret buying them. But and I always get I think they're called two-layer, usually just in olive oil. I found some that they put little jalapenos in. And I know those come out of a can, but whatever. And I'll just dump that onto a salad really quickly with my head turned away, and then I'll mix it up, and it's delicious. It actually works as a, you know. And
it's a good snack.
It is a good snack. Mm. So those are my meats.
I can't stand sardines. Maybe I'll try that with the salad because I can't do it. But I think my sister likes them. Somebody buys and eats sardines here in the house.
You got to talk yourself into it. You just got to think when you're sitting there with a mouthful of smelly fish skin and bones, you just got to say, omega, listen, look at all these omega-3s that I'm getting.
He's
and you can do it.
Really well, isn't he?
And you can do it.
God.
Just bones poking your gums and you're like,
come on, Brad, it's not that bad.
I eat probably three, four cans a week. So I'm doing it and I'm enjoying it, Nick, I promise.
Okay. Maybe I'll start trying it again.
Okay.
The bones is a little sketchy when you first start out, but they're bones that just disintegrate kind of when you start chewing.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing I didn't mention, because it's not on the beginner shopping list, but organ meats are the most nutritious part of the animal. And I recommend people getting started with organ meats if they want to, just by hiding them in other things. So, for example, with beef, heart is really the same texture. If you grind up the heart, it's pretty much the same texture as ground beef. And if you just do like a 50-50 blend, so you blend the heart into the ground beef and you make hamburgers with it, and you'll probably never know. So you can get stuff like that. If you're making a chili, you can cut up liver, really, really, really finely chunked liver, and throw it in the crock pot and make it with the chili. You know, put ground beef in there as well. You're just getting a mix, but you're hiding a lot more nutrients into your food. So that's just another tip.
Okay. I wanted to ask you this, since we talked about that last show we did, Kevin, something about, what are your thoughts on organs from pigs? Somebody told me, I feel like somebody told me, do not eat organs from pigs. But I was curious about that, because we didn't save the organs of this pig that we last slaughtered, but I thought maybe we should, since I talked to you about it.
I don't do organs from pigs. I'm not an expert on organs from pigs, so I would have to do more research in that regard. But I know that if you are going to eat organ meats, like, you really need to make sure that the animal was healthy and was raised in good conditions. Don't just go buy conventional, like, organs.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. I'll have to ask around, see about pastured pork, because ours is just – it's pretty much just – grass with a little bit of grain every once in a while. So, all right. I think that'll be interesting to see.
Cool. And I'll just give the resources real quick. So there's a site called eatwild.com, and there's a site called localharvest.org. And those are really good sites for finding co-ops in your area and finding farms in your area. And then you also have, as far as just ordering online, like, let's say you live in a place where you're just, the grocery stores around you suck, there's no co-ops, you don't want to hunt, you can go to US Wellness Meats online, and I think it's grasslandbeef.com, and there's also lavalakelamb.com. And then, Nick, I know you, do you sell stuff online as well?
No, not really.
Okay. So those are just online resources, but like US Wellness Meats and Lava Lake Lamb, you can just order and they'll, you know, put it in a freezer shipment thing and send it right to your house. So it is a little bit more costly, but it's a lot more convenient. So if people out there want to use those resources, they can.
Okay. And did we cover anything else other than meat on that grocery list? I don't remember.
Okay. So that was animals. Okay. Next we have plants. So you see, this is very scientific. But anyway, my staple plants are spinach, kale, avocado, celery, strawberries, blueberries, onions, peppers, and sweet potatoes. Those are kind of what I stock up on every time I go to the store. And if you, again, talking about budget consciousness, Dirty Dozen list. Let's see, where is that at? That is at organic.org. So I just buy organic for things that are on the Dirty Dozen. And if they're not on the Dirty Dozen list, then I just buy conventional, and you can save a little bit extra money like that. You don't have to buy everything organic.
Sure. My list is almost the same as Kevin's for vegetables. To it, I would add cilantro, which I use as a filler in salad. And I really like the taste of cilantro. I'll eat bok choy sometimes. I'll just usually not roast it, but usually just cook it lightly in a pan with a little oil. Brussels sprouts. One of the most enjoyable things that I've discovered in the last year is fennel. Do you ever eat fennel, Kevin?
No, I don't.
So you get these big stalks of fennel, and the bulbs, they almost break apart like onions. They have that same kind of layered texture to it. The fennel, it's a bulb at the bottom, and then it comes up into these weird kind of frilly stalks. And you can roast the whole thing. This is something that I would cook more than other vegetables. In fact, one of the reasons why I eat so many salads is just out of a desire to have more raw stuff going into me, versus, like, you know, getting into these routines with things like Brussels sprouts, which I used to cook in bacon grease, or kale chips, which need to be cooked like 12 to 15 minutes. to offset those delicious vegetables that are cooked with salad. But fennel is something that needs to be roasted probably for 20, 25 minutes. And you just buy the whole stalk, cut it up into little pieces, put some olive oil on it, maybe some garlic, and throw it in the oven. And it is it's delicious. I know it's one of the foods at the top of the bulletproof infographic, which is still useful to me planning grocery trips, or it was for a while, to help me get into a routine, and just to have a little bit of diversity. Sometimes broccoli will come in, broccoli will go out, cauliflower will go in, cauliflower will go out. Avocados, I always buy every trip to the supermarket at least 4 or 5. Asparagus will come in and out. And then maybe a couple other things like dandelion greens or zucchini would go in and out.
Yeah, and then, you know, if you're buying what's in season, you're going to spend a lot less money than if you just buy staples all year round, because when stuff is out of season, it's a lot more costly to bring in. So they're going to obviously up the price on you.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you, you know, talking about ambition again, if you want to get really ambitious, there's a big movement right now for rewilding, which is basically learning about the edible wild plants in your local area, going out and kind of foraging for them. And if you want to do this, I mean, the benefits are absolutely there. So if you compare the nutritional profile of domesticated plants to wild plants, it's not even really a close comparison at all. Wild plants are much more nutritious. So if you have the time and the resources or want a new hobby or something, you know, that's always available to you.
Yeah, I'm really into that rewilding. I think it's awesome. And I've been doing more and more of that because I live out in the middle of nowhere. There's woods all over the place. And so one of the things I really like to do now is mushroom hunting. And a lot of people are scared of that. Especially in North America, people are scared of mushrooms, and that's understandable because there are some ones that are deadly poisonous. So you want to watch out what you're doing. If you're going to go hunt for mushrooms, make sure you know what the deadly ones look like and just don't eat anything that you don't know what it is. That's one thing that I haven't seen it happen too often on mushroom identification pages, but every once in a while somebody will try and eat a mushroom. And they end up going to the hospital.
Great show title right there, Nick. Don't eat anything if you don't know what it is.
Oh, like that. That's yes. Perfect.
It's just as scientific as the categories that I've laid out here. It's
That's a great idea. So, I'm really into that. I'm looking into that as soon as we're done here.
Before we moved on to the next category, I was just going to give a general health tip of prioritizing plants. So if you just focus on going from left to right here, vegetables first, then berries, then fruits, you're highly likely to automatically improve your health just by following that little I don't even know what to call it, just a system. You guys want to move on?
What do you mean? Can you just explain that a little bit better? I'm sorry. I get the general idea. Are you talking about in quantity or?
Yeah. Yeah. So like if you tell somebody who is coming from a standard American diet and you say, hey, you need to eat more fruits and vegetables.
Oh, yep.
You know what they're going to eat?
Fruit. Yep. Exactly.
All fruit, zero vegetables. So they're going to get a ton of sugar and they're not going to get nearly as many micronutrients, especially when we're talking domesticated fruits. Domesticated fruits are not anywhere near as nutritious as the wild version of the fruits. Even if for some of them, there is no wild version. They're completely fabricated fruits. So if you prioritize vegetables, then berries, then fruits, what you're prioritizing is less sugar and more micronutrients. So it's just a good kind of rule of thumb to go by.
Yeah. And the only fruit I really eat is blueberries. I have a bowl of apples that are, I think, inevitably rotting on my counter. But I meant to eat them when I bought them. I bought a whole bag, and they're nice once in a while. But blueberries, I would say, are a staple. But that's about it. Blackberries sometimes, but yeah, fruit just hasn't been more than outside of like maybe a serving a day. It hasn't been part of my diet in a long time.
Yeah, I did an article on – I was just trying to Google it real quick, see if I could find it. I can't remember what the title was, but I did an article on wild versus domesticated, and I showed a comparison between a lot of the domesticated foods we eat and the wild counterparts, like even down to animals. The apple is a really good one because you just brought up apple. If you've ever seen a wild apple, it looks nothing like a domesticated apple. It's almost like a cherry. And it has a completely different flavor. And I go into detail in the article on why apples became what they are today. And we go into like domesticated pigs versus wild boars. And it's just, it's a really good article if anybody wants to search for that.
Yeah, I definitely will.
Awesome. I don't even know where my own article exists. So just use Google, you know, maybe you'll find it. Okay. So the next category is fats. And this is just, again, this is all stuff you want to keep stocked up on. So butter and ghee are a good staple. If you are dairy sensitive, then just use ghee instead of butter.
What's ghee?
So it is clarified butter. And there's kind of two different versions of ghee. There's just straight up clarified butter, which a lot of people call ghee. And then there is like an Indian type of ghee, which has a kind of a different flavor to it. And they're interchangeable, really. But people that are sensitive to dairy need to have ghee instead of butter. Then we go into some more animal fats, tallow, lard, and duck fat. And good places to get those are Fatworks. I think it's fatworks.wazala.com. I don't know. They don't have a very good website address. Fatworks.wazala.com. So you can buy those three fats there. And then coconut oil, need to be stocked up on olive oil and usually extra virgin olive oil. And a really, when it comes to olive oil, you want to pay for the quality, because just because it says extra virgin olive oil or olive oil doesn't mean it's actually really olive oil. A lot of the producers of olive oil, it's kind of like a scam in the market, are blending oils together and calling it olive oil. So just make sure you're buying from a reputable company there. And then heavy whipping cream and coconut milk I also keep stocked up on. So those are the fats category.
Okay. We recently slaughtered a pig, like I said, and we rendered the fat. And we're keeping the lard. It actually didn't – we should have done the butchering a little bit differently to get more lard. We haven't cooked with it yet, but I found that the cracklings are disgusting. Mm-hmm. But I definitely like cooking with duck fat. I have done that before.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of people are afraid of these fats because they're the fats that have been demonized. I mean, people are like, "Oh my gosh, lard? Are you serious? Like, you're gonna kill us?" But it's a great fat. Saturated fats are needed and necessary and highly beneficial. So I would urge people to look deeper into some conspiracies, I guess we can call them, around saturated fat, the demonization of saturated fat.
So would things like nuts be a separate category? Because, I mean, nuts are – most of the calories in nuts are fat. That's why I ask, Kevin. Would you –
Nuts I have in a snacks and miscellaneous category that is in our near future.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Any other questions on fats or anything?
I don't think so.
Okay. So the next one is acids, and this would be vinegar and citrus are the two primary here. So apple cider vinegar, like Brett was saying, balsamic vinegar, red wine vinegar, white vinegar, just keeping stocked on all those. I always have like limes and lemons on hand because those go really well with a lot of stuff. I love putting limes on chicken. I love putting lemon in water. Just having those on hand is really helpful.
Okay.
All right. And next would be spices and flavorings. So obviously salt, but I would recommend that people get – there's three different kinds of salt I use. I use kosher salt, I use sea salt, and I use Himalayan salt. So I would just avoid the refined like table salt and go for the other three. Kosher salt, really awesome on steaks. If you're grilling steaks or cooking steak in any capacity, kosher salt on steaks is awesome. And Himalayan salt, amazing on like eggs, things like that, potatoes, anything you would normally salt. Himalayan salt's good stuff.
So, Kevin, when you go into the spice aisle of the supermarket, you can buy any spice you want for a dollar. And is there any kind of caveats with that? I'm guessing that there would be.
You're going to want to make sure that, again, these are coming from reputable companies and they don't have any fillers. So the next thing in that category is basically all the spices, blends, rubs, and seasonings I kind of put together. But I put curry powder, red chili pepper flakes, cumin, turmeric, chili powder, Chinese five spice, paprika, garlic powder, onion powder, oregano, and cinnamon are the things that I primarily keep on hand. But you do have to be careful because some of the cheaper spices will use fillers, can have gluten in them, a bunch of nasties. So you want to make sure that you're getting good quality stuff.
All right, cool.
Next one is thickeners and texture boosters. So coconut and almond flour, coconut flour and almond flour are good to have on hand. I don't recommend that people go crazy with this stuff. Like, you don't want to be baking almond flour cupcakes every 3 days, because obviously we're getting back into the kind of processed food category. But if you do need to bake with anything, coconut flour and almond flour are great alternatives. Arrowroot powder is also good. And you want to have some baking soda on hand as well.
Yeah, we'll warn people that I did get fat this way once, or pretty plump, on a low-carb diet through the discovery of these flours and realizing like that every night could turn into a dessert buffet if I wanted. And I mean, it got to a point like this is how out of control this got. You know, I'm frying seafood in these oils in peanut oil and creating like fisherman's platters like you would get at the seafood restaurants. So just, you know, a word to the wise, be cautious. I agree. I have experience in what Kevin is talking about. It's bad.
Yeah. Very easy to overdo it. And there's really, I mean, one brand that they make all this stuff, and it's Bob's Red Mill. You're going to see that pretty much everywhere. Mm-hmm. Okay. So next is snacks and miscellaneous. So we have canned fish. That would be, as, you know, Brett was talking about earlier, nuts and nut butters. And we want to shoot for macadamia nuts, cashews, and almonds. Raw is better. Peanuts, by the way, are not nuts. And you want to limit these things. And this is the reason I kind of put this in the snacks and miscellaneous category as well, is because I want people to remember that these aren't things that you should just be chowing down on all the time as far as nuts and nut butters go. And then we have raw veggies and dip make a good snack. People are always asking me, you know, what's really fast, what's quick, or if I'm on the road, what can I take with me? That's why this category exists. So there's a little bit of overlap here, but raw veggies and dip, and then real cheese. And of course, American cheese is not real cheese. So you want to find some high quality aged cheese. And if you can get raw cheese, which I actually can get in my local Kroger, as I said, they're responding well to the market. They actually have raw cheddar cheese made with raw milk. So that's pretty cool. And then we have jerky. So if you want to make your own jerky, then you can do that. But the U.S. wellness site that I mentioned earlier has grass-fed jerky sticks. There's also Evolve Foods. There's Steve's Original. There's Primal Packs. There's a lot of companies out there making grass-fed beef with no fillers. You cannot – jerky is one of those things where you can't just go into the gas station and say, hey, I'm going to grab some jerky off the shelf. That stuff's really nasty. So definitely stay away from that. And it's usually got a lot of sugar in it as well.
Yep.
The next thing is eggs, just in terms of like hard-boiled or deviled eggs are a really great snack that you can also take with you. So if you're just looking for convenience, hard-boiled eggs are the way to go. Then we have some prepared meats like salami, pepperoni, leftovers. And you want to, again, kind of limiting this stuff. You don't want to eat a ton of processed meat. But again, leftovers is really good, especially for people who are pressed for time, don't like cooking. What I recommend people do, especially in the beginning, is if you're going to go through the trouble of making a recipe, and this kind of intertwines with the whole concept of practicality. But for me, I rarely ever do recipes. Like, I'm very simple. I cook the protein, I cook the plants, and I put them on a plate together. And that's most of the time is how complicated it gets. But there are people out there who they want different flavor profiles. They want more intricate meals. So they want to dig into recipes. And if you want to do that and you're going to go through the trouble of doing that, then instead of making just a serving to get you through that night or that meal, just make a crap load of it and have a bunch of leftovers, and that way you don't have to do as much work and you get the same result.
Slow cooker.
Say again?
Slow cooker. Can you do 4, 5, 6 servings at a time of something? Yeah,
absolutely. So always, anytime I'm cooking, I'm always just making a gigantic batch and I'm planning on having a bunch of leftovers. Next would be coconut wraps. So one thing people have trouble with in terms of convenience is, like, what do they do with the tacos that they used to have or the sandwiches that they used to have? Like, those are really convenient. Bread happens to be, like, just smashing things between bread is really convenient, or wheat, right? So what do we do when we don't have access to that? So coconut wraps are an option. They have this product called Pure Wraps, and I think you should just Google Pure Wraps because I can't even pronounce the company that makes it. It's like Improve Eats or something. But those are just coconut meat and coconut water pressed into the shape of a tortilla, which works really well.
Get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And it's not nearly as tasty, but you have the convenience. And as long as you've got good stuff wrapped into it, then it's going to be tasty.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's good. If you're wanting to do this every so often, because I also recommend that people don't go into crazy perfectionism mode. So having corn tortillas, especially if it's like non-GMO corn and it's good quality corn, just getting soft corn tortillas is not going to kill you. It's not that bad of an option, and it's still very convenient. It's actually the traditional way the tacos were made. I know the U.S. likes to bastardize everything, and we took, you know, perfectly fine corn tortilla tacos and stuff and turned it all into wheat. But going back to the traditional aspect of eating corn tortillas every now and again is definitely not a problem. The next thing I have on the list is dark chocolate. And then the last thing is full fat yogurt or kefir. And full fat yogurt, unfortunately, really, really hard to find in local grocery stores. You can make your own if you want. You can make your own kefir. But there are a couple brands that do full fat yogurt that also don't put a crap load of sugar in it.
Yeah. I mean, you can just buy the plain. I found it and I've added this to my diet. And I think this speaks to something that you were talking about before. This takes a lot of planning for me to stay out of trouble. And I'll talk in just a second a little bit more about what I mean by that. But I need to find oftentimes food that is quick to prepare and portable, right? So if you take a serving, but also is like a high yield as far as nutritional density, or at least as far as macronutrients are concerned, like full fat yogurt is. I mean, a serving of full fat yogurt might be like 350 calories on its own of, you know, fat, protein, and a little bit of carbs. And, you know, just adding almonds or a couple blueberries to something like that, in a pinch, that works really, really well for me. If you get so hungry that you have to go into a convenience store to get food, you're pretty much doomed. But I would even apply that to the workaround that I tried to do, especially when I was tutoring and I was on the road a lot, like away from home for like 7-8 hours at a time. And during that time, I'm obviously going to get hungry, was thinking that it would be okay for me to eat out of supermarkets. And a lot of times the prepared food at supermarkets is some of the worst food in the whole place. If you pick it up and look at it, like these chickens that they cook, first of all, they cook those chickens because they're about to throw them away. And then if you look at what they inject into this once food thing, it's pretty ugly when you look at the ingredients. You mean you say, oh yeah, this is just roasted chicken. That looks good. It isn't. Lots of non-food sounding ingredients goes into that. So that was not an effective or a healthy workaround, avoiding convenience stores or fast food by going and thinking that it was okay to eat in the supermarket. I mean, if you're careful, you can go in and you can get, you know, an openable can of fish, and you can get some nuts, and you can get an avocado, and you can get some berries. But going to the supermarket and looking for prepared food is not a good idea from my experience.
Yeah, and I'll just – what you said is really important, because people will go to like Chick-fil-A, for example, and they'll order – they're like, oh, I'll just get the grilled chicken breast, and that'll be great. And people don't realize that chicken, I mean, you would think logically, like, it's just chicken. Like, it can't have anything else in it, can it? But if you look at the ingredients, I did an article on Chick-fil-A, and if you look at the ingredients on their chicken sandwich, now this isn't the grilled chicken sandwich, but this is the fried chicken sandwich, but still, I think the point applies. It says chicken, and then we have the opening parenthesis. And then there's a long list of stuff. So it says whole breast filet, seasoning, salt, monosodium glutamate, sugar, spices, paprika, seasoned coder, enriched bleached wheat flour with malted barley flour, niacin, iron, thiamine, mononitrate, riboflavin, folic acid, sugar again, salt, monosodium glutamate again, nonfat milk, baking soda, sodium aluminum phosphate, spice, soybean oil, color, milk wash. We're not even done with the opening parenthesis of chicken.
Jelly bean fed cow parts.
Yeah, they're just injecting this stuff into chicken, and this is the end product that we come. And I mean, the list just continues going for like another half mile. But yeah, you can't just look at a chicken and say, ah, it's just a chicken, I'll eat it, right? Like, you got to know where your food comes from.
Yep, exactly.
So that was the end of my list. What did you want to get into, Nick? Did you want to get into the nutrition panel stuff?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So that most of the grocery list that I went over was, you'll notice, it's real food. It doesn't really come out of packages. So if you do have to incorporate stuff that comes out of packages, then you're going to want to know how to read the nutrition panel. And the keys here are, first of all, just ignore anything that's on the front of the package. So the front of the package is, and I think all three of us are kind of against heavy regulations and all this other stuff, but there's no regulation in terms of the front of the package. So that's where manufacturers put all of the nonsense, because they're not allowed to put any of it on the back. It's all on the front for marketing purposes to get you to buy it. They hope that you won't turn it over and read what's on the back. So ignore all that. When you get to the nutrition panel, don't focus too much on calories or carbs or fat or protein. You want to just scroll straight down to the ingredients section. And the reason you want to do that is just like I read on the Chick-fil-A article, right? Like, you can't just assume, oh, this thing has chicken in it, it's just chicken. You have to look at the actual ingredients and see what's been done to this. So you want to look for additives and gums and other fillers. And it takes some research to realize what all the names are and what they mean. But after you've done that research, you're kind of empowered for the rest of your life to not eat a bunch of crap. So it's just, there's a little bit of a learning curve, but if you invest the time up front, you're going to be better off for it. You want to also look for colors. So anytime they're using colors, not a very good option. You want to look for the preservatives. Like Brett said, you want to look for what kind of oil was used. That's really key. That's like one of the first things I probably look for when I turn over a package. I want to know what kind of oil they used. And if they used a crap oil, I'm pretty sure they used other crap ingredients too. You want to look for added sugars, and you want to look for fake sugars, fake sweeteners. So the more we kind of demonize certain things, we demonize fat. So what did they come out with? They came out with like Olestra and all this fake nonsense. We demonize sugar. So they're putting aspartame and stuff and sucralose and these other fake sweeteners. You want to look for those. You want to look for MSG. So make sure that the nutrition facts, the bottom, the ingredients are actually legit. And then on the front of the package, if you do want to kind of navigate this a little bit, just kind of know what's usually bogus and what's usually legit. So if it says it's all natural or natural, if you ever see the word natural, it's completely bogus. If it says organic and it doesn't have a USDA organic seal, I mean, everybody knows how much I hate the USDA, but if it doesn't have the USDA seal, it's not, nobody has actually looked at it as organic. And unfortunately, I mean, I'm not saying we need the USDA. We could have private companies verifying these things. But people are kind of blind to, oh, it says organic, it must be organic, and they just go with it. So be wary of that. Cage-free, free-range kind of terms on chicken and eggs is nonsense. And then my complete favorite, vegetarian fed on chicken and eggs. Nick, do you have any experience with chickens?
Yeah, a little bit.
What do they eat?
They eat grasshoppers and bugs and whatever they can get out of the grass.
So are they vegetarians?
No.
So why? I love the marketing, like vegetarian. Well, this is supposed to be healthy, you know, like vegetarianism is healthy. And like, oh, my chickens are vegetarian, so my chickens aren't eating their natural diet. Why are we marketing this? That one gets me a lot. So just wanted to rant on that for a second.
Sure.
So what about when it comes to buying eggs? Like, what do you recommend, Kevin?
So you want to look for the term pastured. That's a good term. That's kind of a newer term that I don't think the big manufacturers have really caught on to yet. But pastured is just a way that a manufacturer can tell you that they raise this animal on pasture, like not in cages, not in a confined animal feeding operation type facility. So in terms of beef, that beef was on pasture, eating grass in the sunlight, you know, treated well. And in terms of chickens roaming around, eating mostly the natural diet, it's really, really hard to find eggs and chicken that wasn't fed some sort of grain, corn or soy, something like that. Really hard to find. I guess just because Nick can probably speak to this more. I don't know how tough it is to keep them only on eating their natural diet, but very tough to find that.
It is. There are people that do it. You have to grow certain things in your pasture to be able to do that. But otherwise, it's really kind of discouraged. Just like, don't even try and just feed them because they won't get enough food. So, but you don't feed them a whole lot of grain. I mean, maybe for the size, it's about proportionate to cattle, but I don't think it is, because like 10 chickens won't go through 50 pounds for weeks.
Right. So it's not something to really stress over. As long as that chicken is out getting most of its, like, just getting a natural diet. There's a difference between a chicken that ate the grasshoppers, ate the bugs, things like that, versus a chicken that never has. That's all they've eaten is grain and soy. Complete difference. And you can see it in the quality of the egg. If you crack two eggs side by side, you can see that the eggs in a normal mainstream grocery store, just conventional eggs, very, very pale yolk. And then you look at one that's eaten its natural diet, had sunlight, low stress, good health, very, very like orange, deep orange color yolk. So you can see the difference in quality in terms of eggs.
Yeah, definitely. I've noticed that since our chickens stopped laying as much. We actually haven't been buying eggs because I love eggs. Eggs are one of my favorite things to eat, especially for breakfast. And as soon as I cracked open one of the store-bought eggs, I was like, nope, not eating this.
Yeah.
You can really tell.
I mean, they look sickly. And you can tell the difference in butter too. So if you put a conventional stick of butter next to like a Kerrygold grass-fed stick of butter, you can see that one is very light pale yellow and the other has a golden hue to it. The grass-fed has a much deeper color.
Hmm. Right. Yep.
Okay. So that was pretty much it. I just wanted to do that nutrition panel because I know that somebody like my mom turns over a package and all she looks at is the calories and the sugar and the fat. And that's it. She doesn't look at anything else. Nothing else matters to her. It's just calories, sugar, fat. And that's how she makes her decision. So I wanted to make sure that everybody knows to kind of skip that part. That's really not that important. Go down to the ingredients list and make sure you're eating some legit food.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's great. So I've got a couple more questions if you guys still have time.
Sure. Yeah, I got like 10 minutes.
Okay. All right. Sure. That should work. So what are some of the main issues? I think Brett kind of covered some of his. But what are some of the challenges you face in shopping for real food?
The challenges I face are getting enough variety. The article that I was talking about earlier, comparing wild to domestic, kind of goes over how much our food supply has been domesticated. And when you think you're getting variety in foods, like you're choosing four different kinds of vegetables and you're not realizing that they all come from the same species, you're not really getting a nutritional variety there. Even though the names are different and the flavors are different, there's not really any difference in the nutritional profile. So people think they're getting some variety and they're actually not. And it's very hard because of how much domestication has gone on and how much the plants are all similar that you look kind of around the grocery store and there's not nearly as much diversity as there should be. So that's one of the reasons why the rewilding movement, I think, is coming back so much, because they've kind of highlighted this issue with the food supply, and they've shown how much the wild versions of these plants have much more in the way of nutrition. So that's pretty interesting. And it's a bummer because I think there's, I don't want to pull numbers out of my ass, but I mean, we're tens of thousands of species not available to us that are edible wild species that we never even put in our body ever from birth to death. And we eat, I think, from 20 to 30 species. That's it for our entire life. So we're leaving out tens of thousands of edible species that we would probably be getting if we were still kind of hunting, gathering, that sort of thing. So it could be a contributor to why modern health is in decline. Could not be. I don't know. But it's definitely better to get more nutrition and a better variety of nutrition. So I think that's the biggest aspect to it. And then again, if you have a strict budget, that really complicates things. So you just do the best you can with the resources that you have available, because if you stress too much over it, the stress is going to be a lot more harmful than whatever you're eating. So just make sure you keep the stress low and don't try to be a perfectionist.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with planning ahead, I find. Yeah. The most stressful situations for me are when I'm cornered into a situation where I have to almost surrender to the bad choices that part of me wants to make. Like if I go into a convenience store, I've lost.
Yeah,
I've lost. I just remember being places that are more rural or remote where the options are fewer and getting angry about that. Like, why doesn't anybody care what they're putting into themselves? So being able to avoid those feelings, you know, somebody recently accused me of having orthorexia. Just avoiding that kind of obsessive mindset, I think, is really important.
Yeah.
What is orthorexia? I've never heard that term.
I don't know. When I first heard it, I said that's something that the people at Doritos made up.
It is an actual eating disorder.
An obsession on the quality or the cleanness of food that you're eating, but maybe Kevin can tell us a little more.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. It's a disorder of only wanting to put clean food in your body. And you know, it's to the point where, just like any other disorder, where it has a major impact on your life.
Yeah. So, okay.
But yeah, I mean, the reason why I don't run into too many challenges with food is because I also am a big fan of just putting stuff in context, in the context of what's happening over the course of a month in my life. I think on the last time we talked, Nick, the concept of deposits and withdrawals, the bank account philosophy, right? To not try to only make deposits and never make withdrawals. I want to find a balance, and I want to just make sure that my bank account continues to grow. So I just want more deposits than withdrawals. And that really keeps me on track. So I'm never finding myself in a pickle. Like if I go, we have the holidays coming up and people love to stress over the holidays. What am I going to do when I go to grandma's house and she doesn't have anything available that I can eat? Well, you know, when I go to my mom's house for Thanksgiving, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to eat whatever she has available and I'm not going to care, because if I spent the 30 days previous to that making a ton of deposits in my health bank account, then that day of withdrawals is going to have zero impact whatsoever on reaching my goals. So I'm not even going to worry about it. I'm just going to go enjoy myself. I'm going to enjoy the food. I'm going to go home. I'm going to wake up tomorrow, and I'm going to go back to putting deposits into my health bank account. And that's it. It's a stress-free approach. And I know that in the context of things, it's not going to derail me. It's not going to have any effect whatsoever.
This was a really important lesson that I learned as well. That, you know, occasionally you have to make withdrawals. And I think that in the past, it has this effect where it's like, well, might as well now just give up, right? Like I made 3 withdrawals, I might as well close my account, right? Yeah. That kind of a thing. And so that way of thinking about it is really, really helpful, because there isn't like a guilt or a kind of shame associated with like eating ice cream. You know, I probably ate Ben and Jerry's within the last month. And after I ate it, I went, wow, that was awesome, you know?
Yeah.
But before, it would be like, I've actually used the word in this conversation kind of unconsciously, surrender. It doesn't have to be that, you know? Like, I have routines that I follow, and I've described a lot of what I do today, and that puts me, like, way in the plus column. And those foods were designed, you know, not to deal with anxiety or depression or, you know, all these other ways that they're unfortunately used today. They were designed to be pleasurable. So after you're done with them, if you're on the right track generally, it's something that was a signal that if there was a feeling of guilt associated with that, I might have some of the wrong attitudes about food. So really valuable what Kevin said.
You hit the nail on the head, and that's exactly why I tell people about the bank account philosophy, because it's not the ice cream that does the damage to you. It's what you think about eating the ice cream. It's the guilt and the shame that comes along with it. And the guilt and the shame is what causes you to eat ice cream every day for the next 5 days after that experience with ice cream. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have the bank account philosophy and you know, hey, it's not just okay to make deposits. Withdrawals. I need to probably shoot for making some withdrawals because my happiness is linked to that. Like, am I really going to be happy if I never eat ice cream ever again? I love ice cream. Why should I do that to myself? And why should I piss off my inner rebel? Because my inner rebel loves ice cream too. And if I don't feed my inner rebel ice cream, he's going to get pissed off and I'm probably going to get derailed at some point. So, you know, in the summer generally is when I enjoy ice cream the most, and myself, my family probably eat ice cream once a week in the summer because it's enjoyable. And we know, again, that if I eat the ice cream, I'm going to enjoy it rather than guilting myself about it, shaming myself about it, and spiraling out of control because I have things put into context. That's really exactly why the bank account philosophy exists, to help people escape the idea of needing to be perfect. Because in all the other paradigms, in all the other diets, in all the other programs, with all the other coaches, when they go off track, it's, you know, oh, you need more willpower. You need more discipline. You did a bad thing. You shouldn't have done that. You should have called me. You should have done this. You should have done that.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's really destructive to people's mindsets, and it really ruins your relationship with food. So you adopt the bank account philosophy, and all that stress goes away.
I agree.
Yeah, I'm really loving that so far. I've been using it. I guess we talked about that. It was like 2 or maybe even 3 weeks ago, Kevin. And I've been implementing that, and it's a lot less stressful for me to eat now. Now that I think about it that way, so it's been helpful.
Good, love it.
Yeah. All right. So. If you guys want to, if you still have time, if you have anything else you want to throw out, and especially plug your websites.
So I'll go first, I guess. Again, you can find everything at rebootedbody.com. If you want a one-page complete guide to real food, it's not the shopping list that I went over. It's totally different. It's a one-page complete guide to real food. You can go to rebootedbody.com/RFG, real food guide, RFG. It's a free download, and it's probably one of the most popular downloads on our site. People put it on their fridge. And I also have a little exercise that goes along with it. So if you get 3 highlighters out and you go over this real food list, you use one highlighter to highlight stuff you've never tried. Use another highlighter to highlight stuff that you have tried before, but you may want to try again because maybe you didn't like it, but you're willing to give it another shot just for the sake of variety. And then you get the third highlighter out. And these are different colors, by the way. The third highlighter is for all of the foods that you know you like and that are staples. So you basically want to get those 3 categories, and that allows you to just get started right away eating real food. And it's going to also kind of guide your shopping trip. You don't have to make a list or anything. Just take that with you and you're going to get stocked up.
Awesome. All right. Yeah. Thank you for that. And Brett, where can people find you?
My site is schoolsucksproject.com. And some of my favorite conversations on this topic, the topics we covered today, were with Kevin. A couple episodes that come to mind, 352, The 6 Pillars of Achieving a Healthy Body and Mind. That was based on an article that Kevin wrote. And the emergency show that we did back in March, Solving the Health and Fitness Puzzle, would be 2 good listens for people who are interested in our past conversations. But we've revisited this topic a lot through the years on my show. Some other things that we touched on today that we've also covered on my show in the past would be things like the 6 pillars of self-esteem, you know, your attitude towards yourself and how that can affect something like your relationship with food. So there's a lot of detail about that there as well. And I really appreciate you having me on the show. And thanks again to Kevin for sharing everything he shared. I got quite a few notes.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Nick.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys coming on. I'll link everything in the show notes and definitely check these guys out. I really appreciate this conversation. This is going to be a really great episode.
It was. I agree.
Yes.
Right now there's people saying he was right. That was great.
Dedicate one to the ladies. Sometimes a babe needs something to keep you cool. I know sometimes a babe needs something to keep you cool. Better look out now, though. Dave's got something for you. Tell you what it is. I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. Oh, my, I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on a second, baby. I gotta put my banana Dixie cups. All flavors and push-ups too. I'm your ice cream man, baby. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on one more. Well, I'm usually passing by.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please help us out by leaving a positive review on iTunes. If you were angered by the show, please help us out by leaving negative reviews everywhere. If you think this is an important message for students, for parents, or for the future of intellectual freedom, please consider supporting us. SchoolSucksProject.com/AV. For $6 a month, you'll get access to hundreds of additional hours of content while helping us grow and spread this message further.